97.9 FM, 1360 AM, along with Southern Season, bring you Side Dish with your host, Liz Cooper. Listen over the next 30 minutes as Liz Cooper brings the Chapel Hill Carrboro community culinary insights from around the world. From local farming to nationally known book authors, Liz shares an array of culinary tips. Brought to you by Southern Season, Chapel Hill's Landmark Gourmet Emporium. Landmark Gourmet Emporium, great for local gifts and delicious favorites. Visit them online at southernseason.com. And now, here's your host, Liz Cooper, with Side Dish on 97.9 FM and 1360 AM, WCHL.
Welcome to Side Dish. I'm Liz Cooper. I'm your host today, and I'm here with Greg
LaHoulier.
LaHoulier, I'm sorry. I like to start with the wrong name. There you
go.
Well. So, Craig LaHoulier, or LaHoulier, and he is the North Carolina Tomato Man. I believe.
Somehow, yes.
That's quite a moniker to start out with.
You so, just roll with it. You know what happened and
it's what people say, so there you go. So, Craig, for people that don't know you and are wondering where the Tomato Man came from, can you give me a little background about how you got started and what it is that brought you to getting the moniker for to be in the Tomato Man?
Sure. Well, first of all, thank you, Liz, for having me. This is great fun.
Absolutely.
And wow. I think we have to go back to maybe 30 years ago when I joined the Seed Savers Exchange and really discovered that they existed, and then joined them. And joining them fulfilled my curiosity, my love of history and genealogy, and really to grow different things. So our gardens, the first 5 years Sue and I were married, our gardens, we had red tomatoes and green peppers, and it was all great, but it was really boring.
We
tend to get bored with the ordinary, and sure, the ability to combine all of these beautiful colors and shapes and sizes and the nuances of the flavors with the fact that they're history. It just kind of took hold. I became very involved with the Seed Savers, became their tomato advisor, and still am. And it's been quite a ride and an adventure. And when I walk out my garden, I don't just see plants. I actually see people. I see the letters that people sent me.
That's
and they
great.
Were so wonderful to share their treasures with me, and it right. made me want to just share them with everybody else.
So getting started, I read a little bit on your blog and on your website that you met at Dartmouth, is
yes.
that correct? And kind of bought a share of a community garden,
yes.
which I think is an interesting way to get going, and that sort of got your
yeah.
so your area of study, your profession uh-huh. before becoming a professional gardener?
Sure. Well, I got my chemistry degree at Dartmouth. Sue was a nurse at the hospital on site, so, and it just kind of worked. We first thing we wanted to do was have a garden, and we did.
Yeah.
We had our daughter, so we had a lot of projects going on at the time,
well.
You know.
it's a but, garden of a different sort.
And so I went from, I got my degree in chemistry and then found myself in the pharmaceutical industry for 25 years. And then they freed me of that bond a few years ago.
Oh.
And so I said, thank you. It was a nice career, but that allowed me then, where I was doing my passion and my career in parallel, now I could focus solely on what my passion was. And as I approach 60, I feel really, really fortunate that I now get to spend my days listening
yeah.
to the birds, out looking at my plants.
That's fantastic. That's yeah. great. A little bit about the Seed Savers and the Seed Exchange. I found that to be interesting. I had never heard mm-hmm. of that before. And how did you come about finding these people? And,
sure.
And it's not just tomatoes. It's
no,
pretty
it's
much everything.
It is the, it yeah. is essentially the world's genetic heritage that has found its way into this collective of similarly minded, obsessed mm-hmm. gardeners that just can't wait to share.
Right.
And really, it was the brainstorm of a fellow named Kent Wheely in 1975 when his wife's grandparents brought over three great varieties, a morning glory, a bean, and a tomato from Bavaria. And Kent thought, what if they would have passed on before they gave us these seeds? And then he thought, how many other places in the country and the world, remote farms in the Midwest, are mice coming in and eating people's seeds or people passing away? And so we started this collective of people sharing their seeds so that
right.
they could share them out. And it grew and grew and grew. I discovered it from a magazine article in the magazine Organic Gardening. It sounded like it was for me. It certainly was, but we would not be growing what we are growing today if it weren't for the efforts of the Seed Savers Exchange, 80 to 90% of what we get to enjoy now would have been lost by now.
I think it's really an interesting concept. And I think a lot of us out there who, you know, I will readily admit, I love what comes out of a garden, but I'm not really willing to make the effort. So I kudos to you for making the effort. But I think it's really, I think people don't realize what's out there and what we don't see and what could possibly be missed. So what made you focus on tomatoes besides the fact that they're just delicious?
My love of the nuances of flavor. So I could be just as kooky about dark chocolates or wines or beers. And I think... And I've tested myself. I'm not a super taster in that. You know, there is a category of people who are super tasters. I just have a curiosity of different flavors and find them fascinating. And so, you know, peppers are either sweet or not sweet or hot or not hot. They're beautiful. They have variety. But tomatoes, where you've got the size, the history, they're easy to save seeds from. They're relatively easy to grow, unless you live here in North Carolina, where every critter, disease, and you know, natural disaster wants to do them in.
Especially squirrels. Who knew squirrels ate green tomatoes?
What's interesting about what you just said is, so we've gotten with the book, we've been very fortunate to talk in lots of places and had more than 30 events so far this year. And people have talked about different diseases, different afflictions, but squirrels are the common factor.
It's the craziest thing.
No matter where you garden, the squirrels come and steal your tomatoes, except our yard because we have cats. And the squirrels have just never been interested in our tomatoes. But I have to figure out things to tell people because, of course, you want to feel their pain. And so you want to try to help them.
Sure, exactly. You definitely want to understand it. So you have written... Epic Tomatoes. This is the book that you currently have out and doing the book tour in. And when we get to the next segment, we'll talk a little bit about the schedule and what's in the book and that kind of thing. But if you can let people know where they can find it and your website, go ahead and give us that information. That would be great.
Sure.
Yeah.
It really is at every e-tailer and probably most bookstores around the country right now. Story, who's my publisher, has just done a really wonderful job making the book visually attractive, and it's tomatoes are a big thing with gardeners, so it's kind of out there. You know, I have a website, epictomatoes.com, which focuses primarily on what I'm learning as I'm out there talking to people. Right. So my blog there is more about just the wonderful people I'm meeting, the wonderful events we're doing. And then I have a blog at nctomatoman.com where I do the chills and the thrills and the tears and the joys. And so I am a very frequent blogger, probably daily now that it's active gardening season. And unlike maybe many garden blogs, I share the disasters as well as the successes, because anyone who's ever gardened, you have to be an optimist, you have to be resilient, and you almost have to take an approach that this is fun, this is a project. And I'm going to plant 50 tomato plants and 20 of them may die. I'm going to plant 30 pepper plants.
You have to have some exercised patience, I would imagine.
Well, what it is that we learn. And so what you don't want to do is demonstrate the definition of insanity. So if you make the same mistake 10 years in a row, well, you know, you may want to not do that mistake again. However, if, you know, you do something, and I hope to make mistakes every year, because the only way really gardeners learn is by screwing a few things up, thinking back on why it happened, and then the key is, how do I not let that happen next year?
That couldn't be a more true to life philosophy. That's fantastic. Well, we're going to go to a short break. You're listening to Side Dish on 1360 AM, 97.9 FM, brought to you by Southern Season. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Side Dish. I'm Liz Cooper, and I'm here with Greg LaHollier. I can't seem to get the name correctly. I'm sorry.
I'm also known as Craig LaHollier, but it's okay.
Okay.
I go by many, many names.
I think you confused me with the whole French thing. I'm here with Craig, the tomato guy. How about that?
That's really good. And it's accurate.
Yes. So we talked a little bit about your website and the blog, which I was looking over, and I find it to be really fascinating. Mm-hmm. I'm not much of a gardener. I wish I had less of a black thumb, but I can live with the fact that other people do it, and I can eat all that food, and that's fantastic. But you list just the types of tomatoes and the peppers and the things that you're growing. And the list is astounding. I mean, it's not 15 or 20, it's 100. And where do you find all of these? Is it the Seed Exchange, or is it things that people have cultivated, sent to you? How do you get started with all that?
Well, so when you've been in an obsession or a hobby, I guess it's synonymous, for 30 years, it's a combination of people sending you things, mm-hmm. You going to look for things. So I actually think of my tomato hobby as the family heirlooms that people have been good enough to share with me, the historical varieties. I had my dad and my grandfather really planted the gardening bug in me when I was very, very young, two, mm-hmm. 3, 4 years old. And I developed a real curiosity about what they might have grown. And so I went hunting in old seed catalogs and seed databases and found varieties that, you know, the Burpees of their time, and even Burpee back in 1890, 1900, did some really good tomatoes, and I found lots of them. So you find those, and you grow them, and you share them, and you end up with tomatoes in your garden that nobody had probably grown for 60 or 70 years, and you get to see them again.
That's amazing, yeah.
And then you start getting into finding things that aren't what they should be. So Cherokee Purple, which... Talk about, you know, good graces. Somebody sent that to me. I named it, sent it to a seed company, and it's one of the most amazing 6 degrees of separation where here it is on the market, and we'll go to the market, and Sue will poke me in the ribs when she sees it and says, there wouldn't be Cherokee Purple if you didn't do what you did with it. So it's kind of kooky. But I grew Cherokee Purple once, and it threw a chocolatey-colored variant, and it turned out to be a skin color mutation. So there's Cherokee Chocolate is born. And from
I wondered
that,
about that. I saw the chocolate, and I'm like, I wonder if that speaks to just the skin or the color.
It's
or the
color.
Flavor
it looks chocolatey. And then from that, Cherokee Green popped up, and then the bees did some crosses in my garden with Brandywine, and I created Lucky Cross. And we'll talk a bit about the dwarf project that I embarked on. Yeah. So my 5,000, roughly 5,000 variety tomato collection is made up of those main categories of things people sent, things I went looking for, mistakes I've found, and then intentional breeding efforts. And all of them, examples of all of them enhance my garden each year. And we've been selling seedlings locally on a teeny tiny scale. I call it my out of control little hobby. But it's allowed people to, I've started getting a handle on what people like.
Right.
And it's amazing how if no one, the tomato on the cover of the book is one called Green Giant. And it stays green when it's ripe. And when we first started selling tomato plants, we could not get people to take the plunge into growing a green tomato or a white tomato. And then all of a sudden, they come back to you year after year, you know, the green tomatoes are my favorites, or I can be such a creative cook with the white ones. And so it's not just about tomatoes. It's about the culinary flexibility of what all of these different colors and shapes and sizes and flavors afford you to do. And that's why it's more about tomatoes. It's about food. It's about history. It's about sharing.
Well, and it's that connection with people and what
the connection
they
with
can,
people.
You know, it's not even just what they can imagine, but what they can create.
Yeah.
And sometimes people don't realize that they have that capability.
We have some wild-looking things that we make with our tomatoes. Our tomato salads in the summertime are really, really
attractive. Well, especially with all
looking.
The different colors.
Yeah.
So let's talk a little bit about... on your website, again, you have some pretty incredible pictures. When I was scrolling through all the different types of tomatoes, and you were going to get into the Dwarf Tomato Project because I want to talk about that.
Sure.
But part and parcel of that is growing in straw bales.
Yes.
Tell me. How
yes.
I love it. The pictures, and you have to check out his website and look at these pictures because I'm thinking, where is he putting all of these plants?
Yeah, it's
but what
interesting.
A great way to do that. So talk a little bit about that.
So there's a really interesting start to that story. And I'd say it's about 6 years ago. We were on our deck and just having lunch. And this fellow in a sheriff's uniform comes up. And he's in the car, in his sheriff car. And I'm thinking, oh, God, the neighbors don't like our plants in the driveway. Or maybe that cleome or hibiscus looks a little like some other object that I shouldn't be growing. But who knows? And it does. But it's not. So it turns out it's this fellow, Kent, who lives in Wake Forest, who is like the dean of straw bale growing. And he's been doing it for years. And he has a great blog. And he says, I'm the straw bale guy. I've been dying to meet the tomato man. And
I love that.
Yeah,
that's fantastic.
And we just have this friendship that developed. And it turns out there's another fellow named Joel Karsten who's written a book on straw bales as well. My book on straw bales is actually coming out in December that Story asked me to write. And I just gave it a try. And Story said, we'd like you to write a book on straw bales, but you need to try it. And I'm like, of course I do. I can't write a book about something that I haven't tried.
Sure.
So last year I gave it a brief trial and tried peppers, tomatoes, eggplant, a few other things, and I loved it. And so this year I said, well, if you're going to write a book on something, you have to go hog wild. You have to live it. You have to believe in it. And so I have 40 bales going, and we have lettuce and arugula,
so
chard, collards, kale.
Anything will grow in it, huh?
Yes. There's a – we could talk a long time about it, but there is a preparation method that you have to put it through. You have to – Bales are made out of wheat straw that are essentially just cellulose, and water drains through and there's not much nutrients. So you have to add a nitrogen source and let them heat up so the insides start cooking, and you're forming essentially a beautiful growing medium in the inside.
So it's
Once you put your plants in, the roots hit it. You are growing compost. And
fantastic.
One straw bale is the equivalent of 2 20-gallon containers. So people who have success growing plants in 5-gallon containers, those plants are going to the roots are going to be 4 times happier if you put two pepper plants.
Sure.
And I saw that last year. They just went wild. The one caveat is they need to be watered because you've got all this surface area exposed to the sun and the wind.
Right.
And so I water them daily. But if you can garden as your job, you can make that the first thing you do in the morning is grab your hose and go out and water your containers, water your bales, make everything happy. And the people who I think struggle with gardening are the ones that love to do it, want to do it, but their lifestyle doesn't allow them to maintain it. And so they'll get plants from me. These plants didn't do well, but, you know, we did go on vacation for a month. And when we got back, I couldn't find them anymore. I'm like, well, I hope you enjoyed your vacation.
Yes.
You enjoyed your vacation more than the plants enjoyed sitting exactly. there for a month struggling with weeds. It just doesn't happen like that. And so you commit and, and you do it, and then you can succeed.
So we've got a little bit of time before we go to our next break, and I keep putting off the dwarf project. But how did you tell us a little bit what a dwarf tomato is? And I'll cut you off and come back.
Well, the great trigger for that is in selling plants to customers for all these years, the frequent question we heard, and this is as gardening is trying to expand in this country. People really want to grow their own food. It gives them more security of their food source. What do you have that will grow on a deck or a patio or a driveway?
Okay.
Because I love Sun Gold and I love Cherokee Purple. But what do we do with those 8 to 10 foot vines?
Right.
And so I thought about that, and we'll save what we did about that after the break. But that gave me an idea, and we've acted on it, and we're having the best time.
Fantastic. You're listening to Side Dish. We'll be right back speaking with Craig, the Tomato Man. Welcome back to Side Dish. I'm Liz Cooper, your host, and I'm here with Greg Lahoulier. I'm going to say it correctly this time, or Lahoulier. And we were just talking about your dwarf tomato project.
Yeah.
And I love that you've figured out. So tell us how you figured out a way that we could get these varieties into smaller medium.
So we had a need. My customers asking me for short tomatoes. There was the reality of the fact that there was a variety of tomato that's very obscure called dwarf growing, which has a thick central stem, and they get about 3 to 4 feet tall. But there were only 5 known all through history. And the first one actually popped up in France as a mutation in 1869. And then a few companies worked with it a little bit. But it never became more than an average medium-sized tomato. There was a yellow one and a red one. But then I got a catalog from 1915 where they talked about breeding the existing dwarf with a big tomato. And they produced this one called New Big Dwarf that was a big tomato. But they didn't take it any further. They didn't take it any further. So I found it in the USDA seed library, got it out, grew it. It was a nice big pink tomato. Nobody had grown it in probably 50 years because of the rush to the latest, greatest hybrid. The big boy factor, big boy, better boy, ultra girl, super girl, super dog, whatever. You know, 85,000 super ultra bigs. And so we went back to the old-fashioned way of plant breeding. And I have a friend I met on a garden website who lived in Australia who was good at making crosses. So I gave her, and she had ideas for taking some of the big heirlooms like Cherokee Purple and Brandywine, crossing them with the existing dwarfs. And then we gathered about 200 people around the world to do this genetics experiment, saying, we're going to tell everybody what we're doing. Nobody's getting a cent from it. We're doing it because we love it. None of us are anything other than volunteers. I will manage the project. So people would send me the seed, and I would analyze the results and then redistribute the seed.
Obviously.
And over an 8-year period, we stabilized to the 8th generation, 36 new varieties. And they may be dwarf growing, but we've got 1-pound tomatoes on 3-foot tall plants.
That's incredible.
They're growing
actually get the full size tomato.
And what we would do is pick a seed company we really like because of their philosophy. And we'd grow out 2,000 or 3,000 seeds and we'd say, here's a tomato, here's the history, here's the pictures, here's the seeds, go forth and sell it. And that's how we get our 36 varieties. I would rather let the court of public opinion. People can grow it. If they like it, they'll share it. And if they share it, they'll talk about it. If they talk about it, other companies will pick it up. I would much rather do a behind the scenes, let's see how people like it, than a, hey, everybody, this is what I've got. You got to buy it from me. That's not my style.
Right.
I'd rather work. I just want to get people grassroots, and it's worked. And so we've got these 36 varieties out there. We have never sold so many dwarf seedlings as we did this year. We had examples of all 36 varieties. People are starting to love them, and they're coming for their favorites. I want Dwarf Jade Beauty because it's my favorite tomato and it's green and I make salsa from it. Or I want to grow Dwarf Sweet Sue because you named it after your wife and it was aptly named because she is sweet and it's my favorite
very
dwarf
true.
Tomato.
I'll attest to that. She's very sweet.
Yeah, she's the best. Or Dwarf Mr. Snow because it's white. I named it after A.C. Snow, writes from the News and Observer, because he's the first person who really noticed us when we came to the Triangle.
So,
and we've named one after Suzanne. Ed Kelly, and my father, Wild Fred, because his name was Wilfred. And they misspelled his name Wild Fred once, and he thought it was the funniest thing. So after he passed on, we got it. So when you create tomatoes, you get to name them, and we're just having the best time.
That's great.
We may have another 20 coming out this next year. I don't know when it's going to end, but I really don't care because,
that's great.
You know, anyway.
Well,
yeah.
We want to, before we finish up here, you are doing a couple classes at Southern Season. Can we run those dates through?
We can.
And you certainly... pick up the Epic Tomatoes book at Southern Season and bring it in if you come to the classes to have it autographed if you would like. But I know you did a couple classes with Alex Hitt.
Yeah. And, you know, I've been doing classes with Alex here since I think 2007, and they're so much fun. And we got to doing a couple a year, and we're doing it again this year on July 23rd. One is going to be focused on tomatoes. And Alex is wonderful. He and his wife own Peregrine Farms. He started growing Cherokee Purple, and it became his favorite tomato the year after I named it and it was introduced. So when I moved in here and we met, it was like, oh my God, it's synchronicity.
That's fantastic.
We're due to meet. And then we're doing one in September, on September 3rd. We did this 2 years ago, and it was incredible, and it focuses on chili peppers. Because right. If I major in tomatoes, I minor in peppers and eggplant.
Perfect.
Alex also is
incredible.
He does
the roasted peppers.
Yeah, the roasted peppers.
The Carborough Market.
These are fun classes. And I expect that I'll be doing a signing. But mostly we get together, we eat, we talk about tomatoes. And it's just a really fun time in a most beautiful cooking school.
Yes, thank you. Thanks so much for coming today. I really appreciate it. You're listening to Side Dish on WCHL 1360 AM, 97.9 FM, brought to you by Southern Season. Thanks again for coming.
Thank you.